Blog Talk Radio.
Which includes listeners in over 40 countries all over the world. Hello again and welcome to the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We're in our fifth year now, so we must be doing something right. Some of you have been with us from day one, and we're always glad when you listen in. Let's introduce our host for tonight's show. Neil, who do you see there on the producer's board right now?
Well, I see a lot of microphones that I have all opened their microphones, so let's see if I can identify those that I know the area codes. And normally we start off with Steve Thompson. Steve, are you with us, and how are things in North Carolina?
I am, Neil, and I haven't been here but just a few hours, and I came up from sunny Florida and sunny South Carolina, and I can see why the snowbirds leave here and head for those two destinations, especially the Ponte Vedra area. The temperature here is 40 degrees, and it's raining, and it's not very pleasant.
We enjoyed having Steve and his lovely wife, Glenda, with us here the last few days in Ponte Vedra. That's where I live. And by golly, the weather was reasonable here. And reasonable enough, I think Steve and Glenda and his friends are coming back in February and revisit this beautiful area of Northeast Florida, where I call home. And then I think his daughter is with us also, Gay Harvey. Gay, you're over there in Hilton Head. I think your dad was with you today. Hello, Gay.
How are you? Yes, he was here. It was great to have he and my mom pass through on the way to and from Florida. I just wish I could have kept him here a little bit longer, but I had to get back, so we were grateful that they could be here for even the two nights.
Okay. So. Yeah, you're just up the road from us, and I guess that's a very convenient stop if they come south of you and then going home. And, I spent my Christmas time over in Mobile, Alabama. That's a long drive, 7.5 hours, and I wish I had someone halfway to stop and visit with. But let's see who else is with us. I think we have Chuck Albright. Chuck, you're way down in not way down, but about 2 hours from where I am here. You're in Central Florida around the Villages area. Hello, Chuck.
How you doing? Yeah, we've been having great weather here lately. Just a slight amount of fog in the morning, but we're averaging out in the 70s right now. We're going to have a low of 64 tomorrow in fog, but the guys are out on those golf courses, all 53 of them, and we're having a real great time. I was very fortunate for Christmas that my youngest daughter and her son, my grandson, came to visit for a day or so, and then we both went down to see my other daughter, who was in West Palm Beach in Jupiter, around down there, and we had just a really nice time on Christmas Day. So we've had a really super week, that we've had, and I think it is going to be great for golf next week. Take it back to you.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Chuck, and for that report. And let's see, looking way up in northeast area of the country, I see two folks that have been with us as hosts, and that's George Chen. Hello, George. You're on Long Island. Tell us all the news there now.
Hey, Neil. Good evening to you and all our listeners. It was actually been pretty nice the last few days. And Christmas, it rained pretty hard Christmas Eve, but it cleared up Christmas Day. Turned out to be pretty nice. Getting cold here tonight. It's supposed to go down a little below freezing, so I guess that winter has finally arrived. Back to you, Neil.
Oh, yeah, it sure has. You expecting any snow, George?
There's nothing in the forecast until this coming Sunday, and, you know, it's still pretty far off, so I'm sure that might not be accurate at this point.
Okay. And right close to you, Frank Segnor. Hello, Frank. You still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. Got the same weather that George has. And we're hoping that that snow he's talking about doesn't hit us here.
Okay. And Jill, are you with us? Jill Cotton, are you with us tonight? I don't think so. So, Jim Hart. Jim Hart, how are things down where you are? Cecile couldn't be with us tonight. Jim, how about giving us a report down where you are in West Palm Beach?
All right. I'm sorry that I didn't realize Chuck was going to be in Jupiter. That's only 30 miles away from me. But our weather this last few days has been quite good. We've had some broken clouds and an occasional shower. But, hey, who can argue with the 75, 80-degree weather? Not many people I know in Buffalo, as a matter of fact.
Hey,
ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened to our past shows, you know that we can be reached online during our live broadcast. Our numbers, once again, are 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat these numbers, 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Remember now, when calling the show, make sure you press the number one button on your telephone if you wish to connect live with us here on the show. Neil.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot. You know, I see on our board here several area codes that I'm sure have been with us in the past. So if any of you guys, let's see, I see an area code 770. We normally have Bob Furman. Is that Bob Furman or Sonny on the line? No, neither one. Area code 770. And I also see area code 631. 610.
Hey, Neil, it's John Roots.
Hey, John, good to have you back. Where have you been?
Traveling.
All right.
Busy,
you mean between Philadelphia and Baltimore, or just traveling other places?
Let's talk London and Stuttgart.
Oh, my word. You got to tell us about that. We'll have to hear all about it. You have to give us a special report.
Okay. I'm back in Philadelphia.
Oh, good. Good to have you back. Area code 201. Who might that be? And let's see. Well, at any rate, there are some others. And if you want to talk, I've opened all the microphones. So sometimes when we open our microphones, we get all sorts of background music, better than probably what I can come up with as far as music and special effects. Sometimes we hear dogs barking in the background, people talking to others at dinner while they're eating this time of night. So we never know what to expect when I leave all the microphones on. So, and that's what I do. So if you guys that are online wanting to put in your 2 cents, then we're happy to receive your 2 cents. And we'll give you all the airtime you need. We're just here to talk about our favorite airline, Eastern Airlines. And just as a reminder to our listeners, you can tune us in by going to www.ealradioshow.com. ealradioshow.com. Not too hard to remember, memorize or whatever you want to do. Put it down, jot it down, EAL Radio Show. But tell your friends about that website, because we'd like to have additional listeners listening to what's going on with the old Eastern Airlines and what's about to happen with the new Eastern Airlines. So if you come on board and I haven't opened your microphone, just click one and it will tell me that you want to put your 2 cents in. Also, you can pick us up on the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's website by going to that website, and you'll find some interesting pages there. Find out what the retired Eastern pilots are up to. And their website is www.repa, that's R-E-P-A, online.com, repaonline.com. And there you'll also see our little radio icon that you can click on the circle, the arrow in the circle there, and it'll put you right with us. And back to you, Jim.
Oh, thank you, Neil. What do you say? Let's start the engine for our show tonight.
Do we want a jet or do we want a prop?
Oh, that Super Connie sound is good.
Clear prop. Love it.
So, Neil, what's our show about tonight?
Anything anybody wants to talk about. But tonight, especially when we're surprised by a conversation. And, Jim, we put together a list of top 10 airline biz stories that we feel like that were the top 10 stories. Everyone has their own idea as to the top 10 of anything, I guess. And they're not the same top 10s of someone else's. We all have our own ideas of what the best stories. But in the airline business, we've chosen 10 stories. You may or may not agree with us, but we'll present them anyhow tonight. And if you have your own top story that you think should go in here, by all means, when we conclude the 10 stories that we feel were very important during 2014, then we'll talk about your stories. You can tell us what you think is the top of your list. Steve, how about starting us off with number 10 on our list?
Okay, Neil, thank you. And number 10 on our list is an issue that is affecting a lot of airlines, the growing difficulty to attract enough qualified pilots to staff their cockpits. It doesn't seem to be a problem at present for the big mainline carriers. They continue to receive enough applications to keep their job applicant pools full. But many of their new pilots are coming from the small regional airlines where pay and opportunities are less. As airlines have started hiring to address both growth demands and attrition, 11 of the 12 regional airlines we interviewed reported difficulties filling entry-level first officer vacancies. The U.S. Government Accountability Office said in a February report, causes cited include new federal regulations that require applicants to have more hours of experience and that require airlines to give pilots more rest. An aging population of pilots who are reaching the mandatory retirement age of 65 and low starting pay that discourages people from joining the profession. The shortage has forced several carriers over the past year to pull out of contracts to fly airplanes with 50 seats or fewer so they could focus on the growing fleets of larger regional jets with 70 or 76 seats. One very small airline, Great Lakes Aviation, has stopped flying to more than a dozen cities since January 1st because it can't hire and keep enough pilots by November. By November, its capacity was only one-third of what it had been a year earlier. Now, the situation seems to have stabilized somewhat. Two big regional airline companies, SkyWest and Republic Airways, indicated to analysts this fall that they were attracting enough candidates to keep up with their demand, with their needs. But as thousands of pilots retire in coming years, airlines will have to work hard to attract enough candidates to replace them. And from a personal standpoint, it is interesting because at any time in my career, I would have paid to have a job as a pilot. That's what was my love of flying airplanes. And Chuck,
you know, before Chuck comes on, Steve, I've got a comment here. I agree with you 100% that probably 99% of the pilots would have the same feelings that you and I have, that, golly, I would pay, having known what I had when I flew with Eastern Airlines and you flew with Eastern, we used to sit up there at 30-some thousand feet, and beautiful day and clear weather and everything, and the comments were, looking at the co-pilot and the co-pilot looking at the captain, you mean they pay us for this? They really pay us for this? And that is a feeling that I had, and I'm sure you had, and most of the guys that flew had that same feeling. You'd almost do it for nothing. Of course, you got to make a living for your family, but by golly, it was the greatest job. Maybe with the exception of what Chuck feels about maintenance. Chuck.
Yeah. Well, at least you guys didn't get too dirty.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But it was nice to have worked on an airplane and see it take off successfully, right? And land successfully when you repaired the airplane.
It's very fulfilling to see $20 million get up off the ground.
There you go. Okay, that's the same feelings that we had when we flew those 20, much more than $20 million worth of equipment now, like $440 million for an A380 that I saw on the internet today. Hey, I guess, George Jen, are you with us to take over this number nine position here?
Sure, I'm here. Number nine, Virgin America finally did its initial public offering, or IPO, on November 13th. And its stock price has really made some nice gains for investors. The IPO came out at $23 per share. On its first day of trading, November 14th, it closed at $30, up 30%. Stock reached a high close of $38.12 before settling back some, but it's still up 56% with Monday's close at $35.94 per share. All in all, it's been a very good year for airline stocks as their profits have soared. American Airlines Group, Southwest Airlines, and Hawaiian Holdings saw their stock price more than double. Investors in most other U.S. carriers enjoyed hefty, if not that hefty, returns on their shares. For example, Southwest climbed 119% from $18.84 at the end of 2013 to $41.26 at Monday's close. American, which closed at $25.12 on December 31st of last year, or of 2013, finished Monday at $50.84, up 102%. But the biggest gainer has been the parent of Hawaiian Airlines. It soared from $9.63 at the end of 2013 to $24.25 at Monday's close, up a whopping 152%. Delta Airlines shares climbed 74% from $27.20 on December 31st to $47.41 on Monday. United Continental Holdings, parent of United Airlines, was up 69% from $37.83 to $64 this past Monday. Virgin America took a long time to get its initial public offering on the table. It began flying in 2007, just before the U.S. economy plunged into the Great Recession and energy prices soared to historical levels. The downturn kept Virgin America in the red for 6 years, forcing its owners to put off going public. The California carrier didn't record its first profitable year until 2013, and it needed profits in its second, third, and fourth quarters to wipe out a first quarter loss of $46 million and achieve a net profit of $10 million for the year. A year earlier, it had lost $145 million. But, like other carriers, Virgin American has been nicely profitable in 2014. Through the first 9 months of the year, the carrier focused on low fares and enhanced customer service and in turn earned $56 million. Our number eight on the list tonight goes to a different subject. Malaysia Airlines suffered through one of the worst years ever for a commercial airline, as one of its jets disappeared and another one was shot down. On the evening of March 8, 2014, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 took off from the airline's home base of Kuala Lumpur on a regularly scheduled flight to Beijing, China. Where it wound up remains one of the biggest mysteries in the history of aviation. When Amelia Earhart's flight disappeared in 1937, somewhere over the Pacific, the ability of others to track a flight largely depended upon eyewitnesses and the airline pilots sending out word of their location by radio. But the Boeing 777, operated as Malaysian Flight 370, had a number of advanced technologies on board, including a radar transponder and automatic satellite signaling to let authorities track the plane. At some point, however, the radar transponder was turned off or became inoperative, and the automatic signaling could only approximate the path of the airplane might have taken. An extensive search over the Indian Ocean and elsewhere to this day has not found one trace of the jet. Authorities have identified no person or group that claims to have taken the airplane or might have hijacked it. It's just gone, disappeared, along with all 239 passengers and crew members. 4 months later, another Malaysia Airlines Boeing 777 was flying from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur when it apparently was shot out of the air as it passed over the eastern Ukraine. It crashed in a rural area, killing all 298 people on board. Ukrainian leaders have blamed Russia or the Russian-supported separatists for downing the aircraft with a surface-to-air missile. Russia has flatly denied responsibility and blamed the Ukrainian government. The separatists initially claimed to have shot down a military airplane, but then denied shooting down any airplane when it became clear that something had hit a passenger jet. A report on the crash isn't due out until next year. Dutch investigators have concluded preliminarily that the airplane was hit by, quote, high-energy objects that brought it down. Not surprisingly, the carrier, 70% owned by the Malaysian government, is now running into severe financial problems. It's adopted a restructuring plan that includes buying out the private shareholders.
And we continue with number seven. In the early days of frequent flyer programs, a mile flown was a mile earned. Increasingly now, though, it's the dollars spent that matter. Both Delta Airlines and United Airlines announced in 2014 that they are converting their frequent flyer programs in early 2015 to base awards on dollars spent per ticket, not on the miles flown. Starting January 1, 2015, miles will be earned based on ticket price to better reward customers who spent more with Delta. That carrier is advising members of its SkyMiles system. United is giving its Mileage Plus members the same message. As of March 1, 2015, the award miles you earn on most United and United Express tickets will be based on your ticket price. instead of on the distance you fly, so members will be rewarded for their travel spending on United. The carrier says that on its website. Delta and United are not the first to go on a dollar-based frequent flyer program, although they are the biggest. Southwest Airlines, which in 1987 originally based its loyalty program on trips flown, converted its rapid rewards program to a dollar-based system on March 1, 2011. Others, such as JetBlue Airways, adopted a dollar-based system before Southwest. The logical question is whether American Airlines will also convert its AA Advantage program, the largest in the world, when one includes the merged partners' Dividend Miles program. AA officials have made clear that if any such change is made, it won't be in 2015, as American focuses on combining the AA Advantage and the Dividend Miles programs. However, the Delta and United changes to favor the biggest spenders forced American to respond with big 2015 bonuses for its best customers who buy the most expensive tickets. American's bonuses are still rooted in miles flown, though. Gay?
And at number six, for Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, 2014 really put the international into its name. Prior to January 1st, the airport had no nonstop flights to China and only one flight to the Middle East. By December 31st, airlines had launched service to Shanghai and Hong Kong, Doha and Abu Dhabi. The most aggressive expansion came from the airport's biggest customer, American Airlines. American, on June 11th, launched the nonstop flights to Hong Kong and Shanghai and also announced 2015 service to China's capital of Beijing. American already was flying from Dallas-Fort Worth to Tokyo, its oldest Asian route that American began flying in 1987. It had also begun a Dallas-Fort Worth-Seoul, South Korea flight in May of 2013. But it had never offered service to China. It had applied for a DFW-Beijing route in 2006, but a management labor dispute sidetracked its application. Dallas-Fort Worth first became home for a Middle East route in February of 2012 when Emirates Airline began nonstop service from its home base of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. The route soon attracted high loads with a significant number of travelers to and from India, Pakistan, and that region. Qatar Airways, on July 1, 2014, began offering its own daily service from its home of Doha, Qatar, to Dallas-Fort Worth. And on December 3rd, Etihad Airways began flying 3 days a week from Abu Dhabi to the North Texas Airport. It remains to be seen whether the airport can support three competitors between Dallas-Fort Worth and the Middle East. But for the time being, travelers have three choices for their travel there. In 2014, DFW Airport prepared itself for the Airbus A380, the largest commercial plane in use. On September 29th, Qantas Airways replaced its Boeing 747-400 flight with an A300 flight. 2 days later, Emirates boosted its service by replacing its Boeing 777s with an A380. Low-fare Mexican carriers are scheduled to add service to several Mexican cities in 2015. Viva Aerobus has announced plans to begin daily service to Guadalajara, Monterrey, and Cancun next year. And Volaris intends to fly from Dallas-Fort Worth to Guadalajara. Number five?
Well, in an eerie echo of the loss of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 this past spring, the airline has lost another Boeing 777, this time after a crash in Ukraine, as a jetliner carrying 295 people was flying from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 was flying near the Russia-Ukraine border, reportedly at 33,000 feet, when it came apart and crashed in rural eastern Ukraine in an area where fighting is taking place between pro-Russian Ukrainian separatists and Ukrainian forces. Video of the crash scene showed this black smoke rising from the countryside near the border, not far from where a Ukrainian transport plane was shot down on Monday. There are also still photographs of pieces of widely scattered wreckage of a Boeing 777 in Malaysia Airlines livery, as well as of victims. The wide scattering of the debris means that the airplane came apart for some reason at altitude, which is consistent with a missile strike or bomb detonation. No evidence of either has yet been uncovered. A spokesman for Ukraine's interior minister told Bloomberg that the jetliner was shot down by Russia-backed Ukrainian rebels, a claim the rebels are denying. The Ukrainian government is denying that it fired any missiles around the time of the crash. It is feared that all 280 passengers and 15 crew members were killed in the crash. Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, also a Boeing 777, disappeared on March 8th and is presumed to have crashed in the southern Indian Ocean. Jim?
Thank you. Item number four. Next year is shaping up to be the big year in the American Airlines and U.S. Airways merger. If all goes as planned, the new American will have to put together the two carriers' frequent flyer program. They'll have to put all flights on the same reservation system and get Federal Aviation Administration approval for a single operating certificate. But if 2015 succeeds, it will be because all the groundwork and progress made in 2014, much of it invisible to passengers, but necessary all the same. When American Chairman and CEO Doug Parker ticks the accomplishments of 2014, much of its basic nuts and bolts, such things as moving operations at airports so the two airlines are located together. It also includes some fundamental steps as linking up the two carriers' networks through code sharing, such that a passenger can easily step between one airline and two on the multi-flight trip. It also means linking up the separate frequent flyer programs so that members can earn on both carriers and redeem awards on both carriers, regardless of which program they belong to. Adjusting the frequent flyer programs also meant letting premium members of the program enjoy upgrades and other benefits of the other program. The noise of labor negotiations, a rejected tentative agreement by flight attendants, disputes with regional carrier envoys air pilots, the failure to get a deal with American Airlines pilots, has been much more public than the little successes that the carrier has achieved. As we write, only the flight attendants of the two airlines are under a joint contract, but negotiations have been underway for months with pilots. While Parkett has graded the results since the December 9, 2013 merger as so far so good, he'd really like to say that it's going great, all things considered, but he also acknowledges that 2015 will be the big year for the U.S. and AA merger. Steve?
Thank you, Jim. And number three is Frontier is the breakout airline of the year. Indigo Partners bought the airline in October 2013 and pledged to continue remaking the company into a so-called ultra-low-cost carrier, or as we used to call it, a low-cost carrier. Indigo Partners is led by William Franke, one of the guiding forces of the wildly successful turnaround at Spirit Airlines. I know you hate Spirit Airlines, but they are, along with Allegiant and the U.S. Airways, one of the three best airlines in the country. I should say that one of the three best-run airlines in the country. They're very profitable every quarter through the economic collapse, and check out their stock. Started the year... started the year at $17.50 and ended close at $45. Hate all you want to, but they run a great business. Anyway, Franke was, along with Spirit's operating team, one of the reasons for that success. he's going to remake Frontier, which has already started moving in that direction, into a, if not copycat, a similar operation to Sprint. Check out what they're doing with their service in Trenton and Wilmington, Delaware, trying out a bunch of point-to-point service in to a mix of leisure and non-leisure destinations. Plus, they've introduced leisure routes between cities like Lansing, Michigan, Cancun, and Puerto Vallarta. Even Sprint's CEO admits that there's plenty of room for another Sprint-like airline to join the ranks. Now, we're going to be hearing a lot of good news coming out of Denver in 2014. Number two.
George?
Number two on our list, Hobbits might not need the extra legroom, but they know a good airline when they see one. Air New Zealand, the carrier that has regularly pressed the diminutive Denizens of Middle Earth into service in its advertising campaigns, has been named the world's best airline. Australia-based safety assessment website, airlineratings.com, says the airline came out on top of its 2015 Airline Excellence chart because of its reputation as a trendsetter. It also led the website's top 10 airlines for 2015. This is the second year in a row the airline has scooped the Airline of the Year top prize. Airline Ratings said Air New Zealand has been honored for, quote, its award-winning in-flight innovations, record financial performance, operational safety, and motivation of its staff, unquote. The 75-year-old airline was also praised for its commitment to a young, technologically advanced fleet and its continual focus on the environment. It was also presented with Airline Ratings' Best Premium Economy Class Award. Quite simply, Air New Zealand is an airline of first choice, and given the airline's location and the country's size, its performance is even more remarkable, Jeffrey Thomas, the agency's chief editor, said. Neil?
Well, you know, we've been talking about top 10 stories in the airline industry, and this has been pretty much put together by several sources, airline business and some other very looked at sources, especially magazines and the internet. Recognition of airlines, and that's all they do is just research airlines. And so we've got the stock and so forth about what everyone is selling for these days, but it does appear that the airline industry is starting to pick up from what it did, what it was doing a few years back. And when I see that an airline is making so many millions of dollars and so forth, I think about the days of Eastern Airlines when we had our ups and downs. We would lose several millions of dollars, and then we would make several millions of dollars. And that's just the cycle, not the cycle, but I don't know whether it's the management or the way the marketing was done. But it's a very volatile, I guess, industry. And there's so many things that can change that would make an airline successful or not successful, and fuel prices and labor cost and things like that that we were familiar with back in our day. But at any rate, it's interesting that we talked about Frontier as a breakout carrier, and it is starting to show here in the Northeast Florida area, and Frontier's coming into St. Augustine, just a few miles south of where we're broadcasting now here in Ponte Vedra, and they've been very successful out of St. Augustine to Washington D.C. and I think up the New York area, and so hopefully Now, that's St. Augustine Airport, just about 35 miles south of the Jacksonville area. So a lot of these carriers, small carriers like Southwest, started out to operate in the smaller airports around the central, the larger airports that the larger carriers operated, and that was their, I think, success in their early years. And they served those smaller airports and got better, operational costing. But the number one story, I think, this year is the story that the Phoenix has risen. And this is our thoughts, or at least the editor here, the webmaster or the radio show producer. The announcement this year by the Eastern Airlines Group that it would be a certified air carrier starting charter flights in early 2015 and as soon as March 2015. Many of the former Eastern Airlines employees have put their names on the list for the first flight charter from Miami to San Juan to show their support. The major news media and publishers have covered the announcement in 2014 by the new company about its plans. So therefore, they still remember us, Eastern Airlines, and they feel it important that they tell the public or their listeners that the new Eastern Airlines has made plans to fly again. December 19th of this year, just a few days ago, former employees and friends gathered at the Miami International Airport to watch the first of 20 jets on order arrive at the Miami International Airport, and it was a Boeing 737-800. And the aircraft proudly taxied through the receiving arch spray of water, signifying the rebirth of the great name Eastern. And that's our opinion as far as number one on the list, because we want to see the Phoenix rise again, and the Phoenix being Eastern Airlines. And we wish them all the success in the new year, 2015. And we also hope to be on board the very first flight departing Miami International Airport for San Juan International Airport sometime in March. That's all we have really for our show tonight, and we do have some breaking news that, Jim, I don't know, maybe we can just talk about it, the breaking news of the AirAsia aircraft that went down here about 2 days ago. I think it was Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And things changed quite rapidly, and I'm sure all of us have listened to or watched the TV news, and that's all they've been talking about is this AirAsia flight. Does anyone recall the flight number? 8501. Okay. And so let's talk a little bit about that. And if anyone has any late information about that aircraft, which I understand had 160-plus people on board, 162, I'm hearing different reports about that. Anyone have the latest about that? Well, from what I understand, it went down in that area of Indonesia, between
near the Java Sea, they think, Neil.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the airport. I know it's just northwest of Kuala Lumpur. Can't think of that airport's name. Going to Singapore, and the weather was extremely violent, and I've had some of the folks that in my little circle of friends here in Ponte Vedra asked me what I thought might have happened. And I listened to the pundits, the TV and radio shows that I listened to, and I heard their experts. As a matter of fact, I don't know whether you guys watched CNN last night or, yeah, I think it was last night. No, yeah, last night. They had an expert, so-called expert, about what he thought happened to this AirAsia airplane. And, of course, he his thoughts were about weather and about icing and recalling the Air France incident that the Air France aircraft went down in the Atlantic Ocean because of PDOT. I think they pointed it to the PDOT freezing and what it caused with the aircraft, electronics, and what it presented to the pilots. But at any rate, his idea was that they went into an icing condition and that the de-icer boots that actually remove aircraft icing off the wings and also the chemical that was sprayed on the wings that also prevented icing on the wings. And he was talking about that, and I thought to myself, is he talking about jet aircraft, or is he talking about propeller aircraft flying low? Because I don't know of any jet aircraft that has de-icer boots. So after listening to his dissertation and expert witness for CNN, I decided to look his name up because they gave his name over the air. And I looked him up on the Internet. I found his company, and I emailed him a little email letter, saying that I don't know if I missed something, but I didn't think that jet aircraft had de-icer boots on it in this day and age. That de-icer boots were actually the early airplanes like the DC-3s and, of course, the lower operating aircraft at lower altitudes when you allowed icing to build on the wings and then expand the boots and pop the ice off. But, of course, we know today in jet aircraft that we don't use that system of de-icer boots. It's called de-icing. We use anti-icing in today's jet aircraft, and we take the air off of one stage of the compressor and the engines. We run it through the wings, and by golly, we melt the engine, the ice on the wings. We eliminate and that's called anti-icing. So we use that before icing conditions exist, and it keeps ice from forming on the wings. And where he got this idea that they sprayed fluid or liquid chemicals mixture on the wings. I don't know where that came from. So I emailed him. Just a second, Steve. I emailed him, and I asked him, I said, where did you come up with this information to present on CNN? And by golly, I got an answer today from him saying...
What was his name, Neil?
Saying that he made a mistake and that he was sorry that he couldn't come back and correct that. He said that they gave him a set of questions, and the questions that they gave him related to de-icing. And so he developed his little spiel on CNN News about de-icing aircraft, not anti-icing, because there's a world of difference. Okay, George, what were you going to comment?
Yeah, what was his name?
His name is... Craig Conroy, and he's an aviation consultant.
I was going to say, when you sent the email, you should have sent them your resume at the same time.
No. No, I just basically says he basically ought to catch up with the equipment that's being flown. I don't know of any Airbus that operates with a de-icing system. And
there isn't any.
There is none. Absolutely, Chuck. And so,
yeah, I have a comment, Neil.
Yeah, Steve.
That reinforces two opinions and positions that I have. First of all, I don't watch CNN. And secondly, I have a theory that if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going.
All right. Oh, the liquid you're talking about for de-icing is called glycol.
That's right, glycol.
Yeah. But
I know because I had to spray it on airplanes.
Yeah, and glycol is used on jet aircraft. That's true, and it eliminates the ground ice formation. But once
right.
you get up to 30-some thousand feet, I think all the glycol that has been sprayed on an aircraft is not on that airplane anymore at 30-some thousand feet. Do you agree,
Chuck? I don't think so either.
Yeah, but Neil, the plane took off from Indonesia where it was probably 80 degrees on the ground, so
yeah.
no one is going to be spraying glycol on that aircraft.
I don't think so either.
Well, while we're talking this about this recent disaster, tragedy, what are your thoughts? You know, I've got two thoughts on it. I've got one related to the weather, of course, and I think most people are talking about weather today. And from what I understand, the latest is they found some oil slicks or fuel slicks on the ocean, and I don't know whether they've recovered any debris, but they have found that. So hopefully tomorrow they'll find more as to what happened to that aircraft. But just my thoughts about it is, number one, is that it was weather-related, of course. I think, really, it was weather-related. And secondly, it could have been, you know, remember Air France crashing in the Atlantic Ocean, had a PDOT problem on that aircraft, on that Airbus, and it gave erroneous information, data, supplied to the computer system, and what they saw is not what was actually happening out, you know, with the aircraft. What's your thoughts about what might have happened, any of our listeners or hosts?
Well, one of the things they had on the news tonight with your favorite CNN people was that he asked for a change of altitude, and it was denied, but they think, according to what they can gather, he went ahead and moved the plane from 32,000 feet to 36,000 feet. Now, the pilots out there will probably have a little bit better grasp of this, but I wouldn't think that would be enough altitude to get him out of any kind of bad weather. What do you think?
I agree with that statement.
I don't know what the A320, its maximum altitude is, but I recall having flown the Airbus A300 that the max altitude on it was, I believe it was 33,000 feet. It couldn't go
That's
very
right.
high. Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
have Alzheimer's yet.
Okay.
You know,
not
the A300,
yet.
I flew the Airbus A300. I guess I got about 1,800 hours in it or so. And I didn't like the airplane, first of all. It wasn't a Boeing. And I misbid the equipment, and I wound up on the Airbus A300. And by golly, everyone else was above the weather and enjoying a very comfortable ride, whereas on my moonlight flights to from Atlanta to Houston out to the West Coast, I had to fly at about 28 or 30-some, low 30s, because the airplane just didn't have the wing to go any higher. And so we just tossed and turned, and, you know, it was just very uncomfortable flying in that airplane. Of course, they got a different design wing now, and they can get up to in the 40s, I guess. But the old A300 B-4 aircraft, the first airplanes that came out that we bought, Eastern bought, we were destined to the 20s, the high 20s, especially if we had any kind of load at all. And I recall we couldn't bank that airplane over about 30 degrees bank because we get the stick shaker indicating that we were approaching a stall in the airplane. But it was really not an aerodynamic wing on that airplane, and I'm sure they changed it, and I never flew the later airplanes.
Well, if you think about this, the aircraft had only taken off 45 minutes prior to the time that it went down. So it was probably still very heavy. I mean, I don't know what the fuel load was or what the max passenger load is, but it was probably pretty close if it had 160-odd people on board. So if they climb from, I think you said 32,000 up to 36,000, it would pretty much, considering only 45 minutes beyond departure and with that passenger load, probably put them somewhere near that, where I think we used to call it the coffin corner.
Yeah. You know, they're
so technically the plane fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct.
One of the guys on CNN, I don't normally watch CNN, but on Sunday nights, Fox repeats itself from Saturday night. So I've seen everything that Fox has Saturday night, and I don't want to repeat it again, but I usually change channels, and I went over to CNN, and I heard Craig talk about the de-icer boots, and I said, this is very interesting. I didn't know jet aircraft had the de-icer boots, and so that's why it prompted me to email him a letter or an email. Anyhow, he responded very kindly, too, and he said he had made a mistake about that information, and he apologized to me. I'm just, I'm just a TV listener, and by golly, he did take the time to do that, but the experience of being up at that altitude, it just kind of gets me as to the airplanes are able to withstand, and we've talked about this in previous shows, the G loads that airplane can withstand, the Airbus and the Boeing airplanes and what they put them through, as far as turbulence. And we've talked about turbulence before and the degrees of turbulence. I was telling someone you guys remember, we had a DC-8 over the Washington, D.C. area that was in clear air turbulence that actually turned around upside down. And I remember flying with a co-pilot. He checked out his captain later on, and he was a co-pilot on that airplane, DC-8, clear air turbulence. And the airplane was tossed around. Do you remember that, Steve, that incident?
I remember the incident. I didn't know any of the principals on it.
Steve.
And that was clear air turbulence. Yeah.
Right.
You know, when you get to severe turbulence, and I think you and I and George, we've been in severe turbulence, but when you get to the extreme level, that's a notch above extreme or severe turbulence. And when you get to extreme turbulence, the airplane, not only, the passengers that are not seated there on the ceiling, all of the food is all over the floor and in the air and on the sides and everywhere else in the airplane. But extreme turbulence is where you have structural damage of the airplane. So that airplane may have gone through
that. I remember the one gauge that we looked at to anticipate turbulence was the temperature gauge.
Exactly.
And when you saw that jumping back and forth, hang on, strap your seatbelt and shoulder harness, because it was going to get rough. Do you recall that?
I recall that, and I recall Eastern Airlines was the first airline that actually had a person that was put on airplanes, jet aircraft, flying with Eastern all through our system. He was an employee with Eastern. I can't think of his name now. I want to say Christopher, his first name, but I can't recall his last name. Was put on the airplane, and all he did was take samples of temperatures and pressures at altitudes. And he was considered at the time the expert in clear air turbulence. And that's what his job was, to be able to forecast the temperature differential and the pressure differentials to determine whether there was clear air turbulence there. And I think he had some good reports that was published, and I think he was one of the first guys that pioneered when we could predict clear air turbulence. But when
his name
was
Paul
Thunderstorm, huh?
His name was Paul something. I wish I could remember.
Paul,
the last name.
Talking? Who's talking?
Hal Nord.
Hey, Hal Nord. Good to have you with us tonight.
Yeah. One comment I'd like to add is that next major development in aviation is going to be the ability. It's going to have to feed information from the airplane to the monitors on the ground. And these mysteries that we've had with the Malaysian Airlines will be at an end.
Well,
just to add to that, tonight, that does happen because the engine parameters and everything are sent when the plane obviously cranks up and takes off. They're constantly sent. So that
I'm aware of that, but it's going to have to go beyond that.
Well, a couple of airlines do have that system. They said on the news tonight it cost $100,000 per airplane, and that's why a lot of the airlines are kind of balking about putting the system in. It was so expensive. But there is a system out there that does exactly what you say it is. It's just costly.
Well, yes, it's costly, but not as costly as the loss of all the lives this year.
Yeah.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah. Very interesting discussion that we've had on AirAsia. You know, I guess you guys heard, just like I did last night, the fact that, you know, we can track down where a person's cell phone is at any time we want to track it, a cell phone, where its location is, when it was last on the air and so forth. And why can't we do that with aircraft, especially those aircraft that disappear off radar, and like Malaysian and AirAsia here, why can't we determine where they are when they went down?
Well, if they would let people turn their cell phones on while they're on board, then they could track it.
You mean they don't
kidding.
Let them? Okay, just kidding. Okay.
That might be somebody did have it on, so they might be there.
Yeah.
Neil, I'd like to have a little blurb that came on the news tonight. Maybe.
What's that?
AirTran, as you know, has gone out of business, but they had an AirTran number one flight Sunday. It took off at 10:25 from Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta and went to Tampa International. It was a Boeing 717-200, and it was flying at about 459 knots at 32,000 feet. And they had planned on 428 miles to be flown there, but they flew 458 miles, and they had an altitude of 32,000 feet at that time. So that was the last tribute flight of AirTran. Just a little blurb that came over the internet this afternoon.
AirTran started in. Yeah, go ahead, George.
Yeah, formerly known as ValueJet.
Okay,
that's correct.
ValueJet started in 1992, and the principal operating inspector, the POI, as we call those FAA folks that are assigned to a startup carrier and take them all the way through certification. The POI of ValueJet was none other than Captain Bob Bruce, a former Eastern Airlines captain. He passed away several years ago. And Bob was a very good friend of mine. And I think, Steve, you knew him pretty well, too.
Oh, very well.
Yeah, and Bob was the POI of ValueJet. And I was working with a company up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to start another airline out of Pittsburgh. And I went down and I was trying to put together what we needed to know about the operations end of the FAA certification phase of this thing. And so I went in to see Bob, because Bob was a real close friend of mine, stopped in Atlanta. Went in, and I said, Bob, here's what we're going to do in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to put together an airline. And he said, well, he says, maybe you ought to look at this. And he showed me, at that time, the business plan, basically the business plan. Actually, it was the operational plan of ValueJet. And I asked him, I said, can I take this over to the copy machine and copy it? He said, no. You can't do that, but you can look at it as long as you want to look at it. But at any rate, that was the very beginning of ValueJet, which, of course, was later on AirTran. And then now, as Chuck mentioned, AirTran is no longer as of Sunday, and it's now part of the Southwest Airlines operations. Interesting. So we had some Eastern people after Bob Bruce retired in 1989 when the strike began, and I think the date actually of the strike was March 2nd or 3rd, and Bob Bruce's retirement was March the 3rd. So he had already arranged a job with the FAA. Bob was a good guy, enjoyed flying with him.
By the way, speaking of good guys, Ted Sanderson in Boston passed away yesterday. So
I saw that.
Anybody knew Ted, he was Mr. Airline up in Boston.
Before we get too far gone here with our program, Hal Nord, what are you up to these days?
Well, just everything I can do and try to do it well.
Well, I appreciate you being with us tonight. And by the way, we've got two big events here in Florida, and we'd like to talk about any of the Eastern people wanting to come to those events. Show up at the Sebring Light Aircraft Show, and that is going to be January the 15th, 16th, starting January 15th. And then, of course, Sun and Fun is in April. So don't miss the Sun and Fun air show. And they have a great Eastern group of people that show up at both of those air shows. And it's great getting together with any of the Eastern folks. And, of course, we have First Flight coming up, we hope, in March. And the latest on that is we're looking at two dates that are possibility dates for a first flight from Miami to San Juan on the new Eastern Airlines, and that would be March the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and March the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. So those are the two dates that in March that we're hoping to pinpointed a little bit as to whether it's going to be the first one that I mentioned The 13th, 14th, and 15th are either the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. That's Miami, San Juan. Two nights in San Juan and returning on the third day. And we have a completely sold-out aircraft chartered for the first flight to San Juan. And right now we're looking at possibility of, because there are so many people that want to go and celebrate at the kickoff of the new Eastern Airlines, that we might be able to arrange the second flight of those folks that were on the first flight, the airplane returning to Miami to pick up the group for the second flight back over to San Juan, and then that night meet and greet, and then the second night, of course, our celebration of the rebirth of the airplane and colors, whatever, of the Eastern Airlines group flying the new Eastern Airlines. And we wish them well in 2015. We'd like to see them be once again a dominant carrier, competing with the other carriers. And any comments about that?
Yeah, Neil, this is Jim. Can we toss around the idea, I mentioned this a while ago, as you know, of, like you say, the first airplane taking off around 8:30 or 9 in the morning, turning around in San Juan, coming back to pick up the second load. Who has any thoughts on that?
Well, you're going to have to convince the company of that deadhead flight.
Well, I think that President Ed, when Cecile was sitting with him, was using his calculator to give her that cost of, what was it, 280 or something like that. And he did factor in a deadhead back.
Oh.
So why not two deadheads for the same money?
There you go. Good possibility. Well, we should be, Jim, we should be learning more about that in the coming week or two. As a matter of fact, I think Ed Weigel has given Cecile and you a contact to coordinate this first flight, this first charter flight to San Juan. And hopefully, I forgot her name, but hopefully you guys will be able to connect with her and see if we can get the whole thing squared away and defined as to, you know, what we can do, and we can go further and make sure that we can secure the hotel that we want to stay in and the other things. So,
as for the charter deal, I believe that President Ed has given us the name of Mike Jennings, a young
That's
man
it.
Who's going to be working on these charters. And I don't know whether we have a contact for him. I have a telephone number here, 305-869-4259. I'm going to try calling this tomorrow, and I'll let you know by email what I learn, if anything.
Very good.
Let Cecile know, too.
Oh, yeah.
Very good, because we're getting emails all the time from people that have reserved the first flight that will have 150 people on board, and they were wanting to know when, how, where, you know, all the questions answered. And we don't have all of them, but we're getting close to tying some of them down. And we want to be able to give this information to our listeners that have reserved a flight over the air and also on the website. So don't forget to go to the website and see what we can present to you with an update as to first flight. You know, we're about to close out this year, 2014. It's been a good year for the radio show. We've been with you for 52 consecutive weeks. I think we have. We might have had one, maybe possibly two shows that were repeats because of the holidays. Or I forgot exactly, maybe I was out of town or whatever, and couldn't do the show, but we've pretty much performed our broadcast every Monday night, and we've enjoyed doing this for 4 years now, and we're now about to go into our fifth year. So it's been a good year for us. We've enjoyed talking with you about Eastern Airlines and listening to you about Eastern Airlines. It's been our pleasure for 2014. And I guess because this is the end of the year, and we won't, next show will be into 2015. So we want to go out by playing our old favorite, and we played it last year. John McDermott is one of my favorite singers, and he has he's an Irish tenor. He has a fantastic Auld Lang Syne. So let's listen to John McDermott before we sign off. Close us out for the year. We've chosen that song, of course, and it, traditionally that's the song we sing the old year out and the new year in. Not such a bad year, and especially good for the former Eastern Airlines employees. Jim How about signing us out for the last time this year?
I'll do that, Neil. Thank you for the opportunity. Well, certainly this is a wonderful time of year, and we want to wish all of our listeners the very happiest of New Year's. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We'll be back with you next week, same time and same station, www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular commercials for Eastern, we have to earn our wings every day. We hope we are doing so here at the EAL Radio Show. Next week, we hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio as we bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. on flight number 198 to punch the gate for a new adventure into the year 2015. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines and from all the gang here at our studio and remote locations. We all say all together now, good night and happy New Year, Eastern family.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Eastern family.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.